Hi, and welcome to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly program about finance, money, and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and broadcast nationally on the community radio network around Australia. I'm your host, Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. And today we're welcoming to the microphone a new person to our show who's never been on before. Welcome, Ben Simpson from Collective Shift.
Thanks for having me, Ray. It's good to be here.
Now, Ben, we met at a conference just recently, and I guess I'm the doubting Thomas. Ben, ladies and gentlemen, came to this conference to talk all about crypto. Now, if you've been following my program for years and years, you've heard me and Henry Jennings from Marcus Today and a few other people that I've had talk about crypto in very disparaging terms. And I guess one of the shows that's going to be coming on very shortly is an actual summation of that conference, which is due to be broadcast soon. And so, Ben, you and I had about a 5-6 minute chat. And I guess it's one of those things, I wanted to have you back on the show. It's not that I'm necessarily going to try and beat you up. I want to learn, and I know there's a ton of people out there that want to learn all about crypto. So before we get into maybe talking about crypto, can you tell the audience what you do at Collective Shift?
Yes, great question. So we run a crypto research education and insights company. So we basically help everyday Australians and people around the world invest into crypto through independent insights. So we're not a fund. We don't take your money. We're purely independent. The way we make money is through subscription fees. So it's like signing up to like Bloomberg, for example, just for crypto. We've been around for about 3 years now. We have about 1,000 clients we work with. We work with the likes of the Australian Open, Monash University. We're the official research partner of most of the cryptocurrency exchanges in Australia. I've done a TEDx talk on crypto. So, you know, I'm really passionate about helping people because I've been burnt in the past in the crypto industry. So I feel as though it's now my duty to help other people not do the same thing.
I'm really pleased, I guess, because from an education perspective, it's really important that people understand that there are some resources out there that they can go to. And I mean, we have on the show quite regularly a guy called Peter Johnston, who's head of the Association of Independent Financial Professionals. And I think one of the things I'm always trying to get education from people is independent sources of research and information that's not conflicted or tied to, you know, somebody making a buck. Now, you've already said you've got people that come on board, they pay a membership, and I see on your website there are different packages. So, and again, they're free to pay, not pay, you know, read the resources. There's also a lot of free stuff there, isn't there?
Yeah, we do a heap of free stuff, Ray. So we have about 100 free resources. We've got a beginner's course. We've got a free newsletter. We've got a free YouTube channel. We do 2 free podcasts. We do a lot for free. And the reason being is because we generally want people to start getting their information from proper sources. There's a lot of pretty poor information out there. Because if we think about cryptocurrency, it's a very speculative, it's a very misunderstood market. So anyone can, you know, step up to the microphone and pretend to know what they're doing. But unfortunately, a lot of people fall down the trap of following the wrong people. So, you know, we're really just trying to push out there, you know, some more independent quality information to help people navigate the markets.
Well, certainly given the credentials of people that are now tapping into your resource, I guess I'm very pleased to have you on the show because we like to do the same thing. We like to tap into resources that know what they're talking about. So let's get into a little bit of some of the detail. I attended many years ago. I actually went to a crypto conference and a luncheon about 10 years ago when we were talking about, at that time, whether the Bitcoin at that time was going to rise from $2 to $2.50. And I jokingly came home and said to my wife at the time, why don't we buy 500 Bitcoins and just, you know, see what the heck, you know, for $1,000 or whatever. And it's one of those, you know, great what could have been type of discussions when I think about, you know, what that many Bitcoins would have been worth in today's money. That aside, I come from a very technical background. I've done 40 plus years in IT. And so my big interest was in blockchain. Can you explain to the listeners the difference between a coin and blockchain?
Yeah, so blockchain is the technology that most cryptocurrencies are built upon. And the blockchain is the immutable ledger that allows cryptocurrencies to interact. So a blockchain is just basically like a database. And that database is created in a decentralized way. So if you think about a database like a bank, the bank owns all the information of who owns what money, all of those accounts are stored on their database. You know, I don't have a copy of what Ray has, for example. Now, if the bank goes down, the bank goes down. You can't use the bank. So we saw recently there were some ATMs going out. I think it might have been NAB that had an outage. You can't get your money out of the bank because they own the data. And if the data's off, well, so be it. You can't do much about it. In a blockchain, in a decentralized way, every single person that uses that database, that blockchain, owns a copy. So Bitcoin, for example, every single person that has that uses Bitcoin owns a copy of that database. So instead of one individual personal company owning that data, every single person has a copy. So you can't turn it off. That's the idea of decentralization. There's no one single source of information. And then the coins are basically just the assets that you trade, just like shares. And the coins are what has the value and basically live on the blockchain.
Okay, so I just wanted to pick you up on a term there, just in case listeners aren't familiar. What does immutable mean when you were talking about data?
So immutable is basically the idea that you can't change, you can't remove, you can't affect the ledger. And the reason being, if you think about, we talk about Bitcoin, millions and millions of people use Bitcoin, right? And if you think the game whack-a-mole, right? You know, in that game in the arcade where there's little things pop up and you whack them with a hammer. Mm-hmm. It's like that, right? You hit one, another one pops up. It's the same with Bitcoin. Because every single person in the network has a copy of the ledger, you physically can't remove it. Because if you remove one person's copy of the ledger, you've got millions and millions of other people that have the same thing. It all updates synchronized across the network. So immutable means you can't change anything that happens on that blockchain. You can't undo a transaction. The way the blockchain is built is once something happens, it is irreversible, meaning there is no central way, no override function, no control, alt, delete, no customer support to undo anything. Once a blockchain transaction is verified, it will be there forever.
And I think that's an important aspect when people are asking about security. And there's been many, many stories in the press about people that have lost passwords and they've gone searching through rubbish tips to try and find their hard drives that they inextricably decided, well, let's throw that out. And sitting on there was a password key and a bunch of information that pertained to a coin reservoir. I guess it's one of those things. Can you tell us a little bit about why there's only 21 million Bitcoins and what does that actually mean?
Yeah, so there is a limited supply of Bitcoin, meaning that they're hard-coded into the blockchain, hard-coded into the software, means that there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin ever produced, and you can't change that. Why 21 million? No one actually really knows. The creator of Bitcoin is actually someone that it's an anonymous person, individual group. There's a lot of conspiracy stories.
Is it Satoshi or some? Nakamura Satoshi.
Yeah, it's Satoshi Nakamoto. Yeah,
that's it.
So
that's
it's
it.
A very there's a few conspiracy stories, but it's completely anonymous. So no one actually knows the creator. So someone created the code, put it out into the world, and then basically it is just naturally grown from nothing, and now over 13 years it's been live. And it's one of those things, the network effects. Once it starts to grow, it's like you can't turn it off. So, sorry, I've lost my train of thought there, Ray. What was the?
No. But there's a limited supply. But the way
sorry,
that
21 million,
I
yeah.
guess in no way different to when you have shares. Cisco used to do this all the time. They used to split their stock, and so Bitcoins get split up as well, don't they?
So Bitcoin, but there's a 21 million Bitcoin that will ever be created. That can never change. Right now in circulation, there's about 19.5 million Bitcoins that are currently available to buy. The rest of the 1.5 million will be mined over the next 100 odd years. And the way that the Bitcoins are created is just like if you think about physical gold, someone goes out with a pickaxe and they're mining physical gold out of the ground. Bitcoin are mined through computers. So it's the next evolution, we believe, of physical gold to now digital gold, being Bitcoin. And what happens is as these miners create more Bitcoin, it comes into the circulation, but it's hard-coded into the software. Every day will be the same amount of Bitcoin produced, right? So you know exactly the supply effects of Bitcoin. Now, what happens every 4 years is you get what's called the halvings. The amount of Bitcoin that is produced every day halves. So if you think about something that halves every 4 years, it gets closer and closer and closer to zero, but it'll never actually get to zero. So it's going to take about 100 years to get to very, very close to 21 million Bitcoin. And the supply, if you think about something that halves, slows down so fast that basically you're not producing any more Bitcoin. So the supply basically stops. So as you get increasing demand, and we're seeing that with Bitcoin, there's an all-time high number of Bitcoin accounts being created right now. It continues to grow. We're at an all-time high amount of users on the Bitcoin blockchain. So demand continues to increase and the supply is decreasing. So you get this, you know, natural supply and demand curve, which is pushing pressure up on the price. That's one of the reasons why Bitcoin is an alternative asset or alternative money system, which is deflationary in nature because the supply decreases versus cash or dollars that there is an infinite supply of. And we've seen that over the last 2 or 3 years. They have printed more supply, more cash into the economy, which pushes the cost of living up, and it decreases the value of cash. That's why if you've held cash for the last 10 years, you're not going to be able to buy what you could have bought 10 years ago if you just held in cash.
Normal inflation. I guess from an outsider's perspective, I'm looking at this thinking, my God, maths nerds must love Bitcoin and crypto, because when you're talking about, you know, constant halving, it's an old joke. I used to love maths and still do love maths, but when you continually halve something, you never actually get there. And it's like trying to extrapolate pi. It's one of those things, or the radius, the circumference of a circle. It's wonderful. I love that kind of geeky kind of maths, because it, the same kind of thing applies here in Bitcoins. And so I'm curious then that when people have got, an initial view of crypto, it still is dominated by a lot of misinformation. So how long do you think it takes for a raw beginner to be able to wade through a lot of this noise, to be able to get to, I think, some gritty information that helps them at least take this first step down the path of, I think, investing in this asset class, even though from a regulatory perspective today it's not a product, but I call it an asset class because people are putting money into it, and so I need to talk about it because people keep asking. So do you think there's a lead-in time, or do people just jump in and just do it anyway?
Good question. Look, we've got to remember that Bitcoin right now, it's been live for a bit over 13 years, right? This isn't brand new, but it's not old either, right? This has been around for a little while. The market cap of Bitcoin is over $500 billion, about $750 billion of value in Bitcoin. There's millions and millions and millions of people that use Bitcoin. People are using Bitcoin every day in third world countries where their local cash, their local dollars, like in Venezuela, El Salvador, Nepal, these countries, their local currency is so inflated so much that they cannot physically use it because of the economy and how bad it is. In Argentina, the interest rates are 96%. This is absurd, right? We don't see that in, you know, where we are in Australia, right? We're protected. But we've got to, and that's why we've got to keep an open mind to these sorts of things. So the people that don't have an open mind, that think it's a scam, well, you're probably not going to have a chance of learning about this, right? People thought email was a scam when it first came out. The internet, right? I remember the internet came out, everyone thought it was never going to go anywhere.
Look, it's about time for a break. You're here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm here with Ben Simpson from Collective Shift, and we are talking about all things crypto, Bitcoin, blockchain, etc., etc. I'm really intrigued. I know my listeners will be. We're going to take a short break and be back in just a moment. Hi, and thank you for listening to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly radio program about finance, money, and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally on the Community Radio Network around Australia. The views, comments, and opinions aired during our program should not be construed or viewed as financial advice. Any commentary is general advice only and does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. You should consider whether the advice is suitable for you and your personal circumstances. If in doubt, you should contact an authorized, licensed financial planner. We welcome questions and feedback, and you can get in touch with us via our blog, social media channels, or email. Please search for Dollars and Making Sense in your favourite podcast platform, or check out our blog at otgcapital.com.au/blog. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly program about finance, money, and investing. I'm really pleased to have at the microphone today Ben Simpson from Collective Shift. and we are talking all things to do with crypto. Now, Ben, this is the first time on the show, and while we were in our break, I guess one of the things that I'm really keen on doing is really baby steps so that people don't get overawed. And, you know, before we went to a break, we were talking about 21 million coins and blockchains and the like. Let's take it back a step now. So if somebody turned up and knocked on your door and said, Ben, I know nothing, where's a good place to start? What would you say to that person?
Yeah, I definitely think starting out with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the biggest and the oldest cryptocurrency. There's thousands and thousands of different cryptocurrencies. It's like, where do you start in the share market, right? Like, you can't physically go and learn everything about it straight away. So I definitely start to think about Bitcoin. And we've got some resources over on Collective Shift where you can, you know, do a beginner's course. We've got some resources. But understanding Bitcoin is the main important asset to understand. Once you understand Bitcoin, everything else starts to make sense. But before you can really understand Bitcoin, you've got to understand what money is. If you don't understand what money is and how money is created and the value of money, well, then Bitcoin doesn't make sense, right? If you have full faith and belief.
That's a very good point you make there, actually. Very good point.
That's how I started to learn Race. So like 6 or 7 years ago, I started to go down the rabbit hole of understanding why the $10 note in our wallet is worth what it is. And when you really start to dig deeper, you just realize it's all built on trust. We all believe it, right? Just
because it's quite esoteric when you think about it. You're not old enough to remember, but when the millennium bug came around and people were in 1999, not just, you know, reveling in Prince's song 1999, but they were thinking the world was going to end. And I sat there and I was in IT at the time saying to people, guys, this is an imaginary construct. You know, the Earth is not going to stop rotating because all of a sudden computers can't work out whether it's 1999 or 2000. And in exactly the same way, these are imaginary constructs that we're talking about, aren't we?
Yeah, and money used to, you know, if you go right back, we used to trade things, right? We used to trade a goat for a cow. That's how we had value. And then they came out with gold, right? They come out with, you know, things where you could slice and dice gold and used to create the gold coins, used to be one for one. And then someone smart figured out that you could melt gold and you could actually bring in copper. So you could create two gold coins, but, you know, there actually weren't 100% gold, there's copper in them, right? And then they realized that they could get in their gold coins at all and they had just copper. And then they created the notes, and those notes, the dollars we have in our wallet, represented gold they used to hold at the bank. Right? Money used to be backed by gold. Then they realized, well, maybe we don't even need to do that. We can just print more money and just remove gold altogether. You used to be able to go in the bank and swap your coins for actual physical gold. Now that's all completely gone and there is literally nothing backing the dollar. It's just the fact that we all believe and trust it is what it is, and we print more and more money. And that's why you get inflation and the cost of the purchasing power of your cash has declined so rapidly over the last 20 or 30 years. That's why if you don't hold investments and you continue to hold cash, what you've been able to buy with that cash has deteriorated really quickly. And that's really when you go, what on earth is going on? How does this make sense? And by the way, Ray, I finished school about 10 years ago. They don't teach any of this in school. You know, you don't learn any of this. You don't learn how to invest. You don't learn what money is, right?
No, in fact, I must tell you that with some of my very earliest shows, and as an ex-financial planner, we were encouraged, and I always was more than happy to go to our local high schools to do the very basics in the economy and you know, how to balance a budget. And back in the day when we still had them, how to balance a checkbook. You know, they're gone, but even, you know, reading a bank statement, what it actually means, and a credit card. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ben. I mean, the very basics of financial literacy is what you and a whole bunch of people that come onto my show, we're constantly harping on about that the kids today. But I have to say, even when I was growing up, nobody taught it. You had to go out and have an interest and do it yourself. So okay, this raw beginners come in, they're looking at some of your tutorials. So they're going to get some basics there. Do they start off by actually putting some money into what? What do they put their money into if they're going to start this journey?
Yep. So another free course that I'd highly recommend checking out, free on our site. It's how to buy your first bit of Bitcoin, basically. So it's a very simple course to follow. It just shows you step by step. And that's what I'd first recommend. You don't need to buy a full Bitcoin. you can buy $10 of Bitcoin. So you want to sign up to, it's like signing up to a broker or an exchange where you're going to buy shares. It's pretty much the exact same process, only through a cryptocurrency exchange. So you sign up, you can deposit $10 of Bitcoin and you buy, deposit $10 of cash and you can buy a little bit of Bitcoin. And just by doing that process, you're going to learn so much about what on earth is actually going on. It's probably going to be very overwhelming. But if you're familiar with the stock market or buying shares, it's very similar. Like, it's not too much different. You're just talking about a different asset class. So I'd recommend just buying a little bit of Bitcoin, understanding it, and starting to read and learn. It took me 6 months to get my head around it when I first got into Bitcoin. I consumed as much content as I could possibly consume. I spoke to as many people as I possibly could. And after about 6 months, I bought, because I like to have, you know, a lot of conviction before I step in. But I know a lot of people like to just dabble and test. So you can, you know, jump in and have a play around.
Fair enough. I mean, what are the traps that you see that are out there that you want to, you know, raise the flag right now? You put a big semaphore out there right now and say to people, you know, let's say top three tips to people to say, don't do this. You know, what kind of things would you be saying to them?
There's a lot of scammers in the cryptocurrency market, a lot. And a lot of people get done, billions of dollars. I think it was $3 billion the banks mentioned in a conference was at recently were scammed in Australia. If it's too good to be true, it usually always is. You're right. That has been going on for a long time.
How many times have I said that on this program? Crikey, I'd be a rich man forever for a dollar every time I said that. So nothing's changed even in the crypto space. Okay, so if it's too good to be true, but I mean, we normally don't mention company or trade names, but is there a top three or top five trusted crypto exchanges? It's an exchange that you would put this money into. Is that correct?
That's correct. So there's some great ones in Australia. You've got Coinbase, you've got SwiftX, CoinSpot, CoinJar. We've got some of these on our website. You can go check them out. But what we say, Ray, with these crypto exchanges are that they are not banks. They are not, you know, we don't recommend you holding your cryptocurrency on these exchanges. You want to buy them and then you want to withdraw your cryptocurrency. So the way you do that is you can actually buy what's called a wallet. So with shares, your shares are stored, you know, your shares are just digital representations of ownership. With cryptocurrencies, they're assets that you want to hold within your own wallet. And this is the core difference between other asset classes, right? You actually, when you buy these cryptocurrencies, by holding them on an exchange, yes, they're under your name, but they're not insured against you. So what we saw last year, and I know we wanted to briefly touch on FTX, Ray, with what happened with FTX was FTX, the founder was committed, you know, he committed fraud. He basically stole people's money. So when FTX went bankrupt, anyone that was holding their cryptocurrencies on FTX lost it. They're not insured. There is no insurance in cryptocurrency. So, you know, what you do is you actually withdraw your cryptocurrency onto your own wallet. It's called a hardware wallet, just like you remove cash and put it into your physical wallet, only digital. So what you do is you basically buy a wallet, and a couple of wallets, for example, are called Ledger. So you buy a Ledger. It's like a USB. You get the USB sent to you. You set it up, and you withdraw your cryptocurrency from the wallet, from the exchange to your wallet. And that way, you are in complete control. And this is one of the biggest ethoses of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. It's about being your own bank. It's removing any risk or counterparty risk by having someone else control your assets, to a point where you are your own bank. And by holding that Bitcoin yourself, no one can ever take it off you. If a Combank shuts down, if there's a, you know, a civil war, if someone steals, you know, Combank's, they're going to rob the bank, doesn't matter. Your cryptocurrency is yours and no one can take it off you. And that's one of the biggest ethoses of Bitcoin.
So if you've got a physical USB, are you in danger potentially that physical asset could go astray? And this is, you know, leads to the situation that we were talking at the beginning of the second half, where somebody's searching through a tip trying to find, oh my God, where did I put that hard drive? This time it's something a lot smaller and it's a USB. So if you lost that USB, you're done. Does that mean you've done your cash?
Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper. So basically, if we think about where is the cryptocurrency, right? We can't physically touch. It's not a physical thing. The cryptocurrency is actually stored on the blockchain, which we spoke about before. The blockchain lives in the cloud. right? So if we think about a blockchain, your wallet, your cryptocurrency actually lives on the blockchain, but it lives in the cloud. How do you get access to that? It's through a password. And the password is a 12-word or 24-word set of phrases that you need to access your cryptocurrency on the blockchain. Now, to get access to the blockchain, you can either use your 12 words that you write down, or you can store those 12 words on your wallet, on your ledger. So you're not actually physically, technically removing your cryptocurrency ledger. Your ledger is your password. So you're storing your password on that ledger. That's why people go scrummaging for it in the tip. Not because their cryptocurrency is in there. It's because their password is in there. Cryptocurrency, you can still see it. You can log in and you can see it, but you can't withdraw it unless you have your password. And that's why the ledger is so important.
So if you can remember your password, then not having that USB is not an issue then. Is that correct?
Correct. So, for example, you know, I've got my ledger, but I also know my 12 words. So if for whatever reason I lost my ledger. So here's an example, right? My ledger is not with me at the moment. I'm in Sydney. I'm traveling. It's not with me. It's in a different location. But if I needed my Bitcoin, I know my 12 words so I can log in and grab it.
Okay, great. Look, we're just about out of time, Ben, which really annoys me because I've still got a gazillion questions. I think I'm doing the same thing of halving. Every time I ask a question, I get two more. So look, Ben, we'd love to have you back on the show because I know we're going to get great feedback from our audience on this because there's just so many things that people keep asking about this. I think some of the key elements are, and again, some takeaways. I always like to leave our audience with some takeaways. CollectiveShift.io is the website. I'm just looking at it right now on my screen, so I'm looking away. But CollectiveShift.io is the website, ladies and gentlemen. Have a look at it. There's a ton of free resources, Ben. So, again, I'm always thankful that people are willing to do the education piece. Ben, there's a lot more that I want to ask you, so hopefully you'll be able to come back. Ladies and gents, there's classes there, some you pay for, some you'll be able to access online for free. I think we've just scratched the surface. It's like the iceberg. And hopefully it's not the Titanic that's going to come around and hit it. But I think there's a lot of good stuff to learn about there. Personally, me, I love blockchain. I think it's a great technology and I use it in signatures and the like. But Ben, from Collective Shift, it's been a real pleasure having you on Dollars Making Sense. Thank you so kindly.
Thanks for having me, mate.